shake, baby. Do the hip shake, baby. Shake your hips, baby. Shake your hips, baby. Well, if you don't know, don't you be no afraid. Just listen to me. Do what I say. Don't you move your head. Don't you move your hands. Don't you move your lips. Just shake your hips. Do the hip shake, baby. Do the hip shake, baby. Shake your hips, baby.
And this is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Revolution starts right now. You're listening to The Real Issue on KZFR Radio. This is Sue Hildebrand. The Real Issue is a public affairs talk show, and we are here every Wednesday night from 6 until 7 p.m. This edition of The Real Issue is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Farm Star Pizza, where the farmer is the star. Farm Star serves lunch and dinner with curbside pickup and offers delivery through Entree Express. They also have vegan and gluten-free offerings. Open 7 days a week from 11 a.m. till 9 p.m. They're located at 2359 on the Esplanade here in Chico. For details, find Farm Star Pizza on Facebook and at farmstarpizza.com. So last night, over 140 people showed up at the Chico Masonic Center to learn about an application to form a new water district called the Tuscan Water District. And over 120 people tuned in via Zoom to listen. The event had only been scheduled late last week, so the very large turnout suggests an interest and even a concern about the formation of this new district. The evening started with three speakers, followed by questions from attendees. The first speaker was Paul Baer, an almond farmer and the former chair of the Rock Creek Reclamation District. Paul Baer shared his story about his experience with the members of the organization Agriculture Groundwater Users of Butte County, or the AGUBC, and that when he refused to give them support of the Tuscan Water District, they worked to oust him from the very reclamation district that he had formed over 40 years ago. The second speaker of the night was lawyer and domestic well user Jim McCabe. Jim McCabe, like a trial lawyer laying out his case, talked about how and why the Sustainability Groundwater Management Act, or SGMA, was created, and why the AGUBC was petitioning the state of California to create this new water district. Essentially, McCabe argued, the AGUBC is trying to subvert the spirit of SGMA by excluding the various stakeholders from decisions about Butte County's groundwater. And then finally, Amy Raymond, a systems engineer, discussed the unspoken costs involved in creating this water district, delivering on the vague objectives in the application, which she estimated at $60 million on the low end. And she talked about the increased taxes that would most likely impact water users throughout the county, not just within the water district. So towards the end of the evening, Butte County Supervisor Deborah Lucero listed the timeline for this application to become a full-on water district, a timeline suggesting that this could happen within just a few weeks. Now, you may be wondering why you have not heard of the proposed Tuscan Water District until now. But here on The Real Issue, we have been following the progress of the AGUBC for over 2 years, and we have noticed that they have not put a lot of effort into educating the public about themselves, nor about the implications of this new water district. So tonight, here on The Real Issue, we will spend the entire hour on understanding the proposed Tuscan Water District, who is behind this effort, and how it will impact the very future of Butte County, and how this compares to what happened, for example, in the Owens Valley. So during the first part of this program, we'll talk with Jim McCabe about the proposed Tuscan Water District itself. And then during the second part of the program, we'll talk with water policy analyst with Aqua Alliance, Jim Brobeck, about how this effort to privatize the water in Butte County fits within the statewide effort to move the water from the North State down to the South. So let's just jump right in. I have on the phone with me Durham-based lawyer and domestic well user Jim McCabe. I am so happy to welcome you to The Real Issue, Jim McCabe.
Well, thank you, Sim. I'm happy to be here.
So, Jim, as I mentioned in the introduction, you so skillfully laid out your arguments for why you're concerned about the proposed Tuscan Water District, particularly with the people and the organization behind this effort. And so what I want to do is I want to go through some of your arguments, and I want to start with, I thought it was so educational for me personally. You started with the idea of the tragedy of the commons and how the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act was the state's solution. And so for just like as a reminder for listeners, the tragedy of the commons is this idea that a public good, for example, a cow pasture, a public good that is completely unregulated will result in the loss of that public good. So in the cow pasture example, if the pasture can support 50 cows, there are five herders, then each herder can have 10 cows. But if there are no regulations around how many cows you can have, each herder might put 11 cows or 12 cows in the pasture, and that results in the devastation of the pasture. then no one can use the pasture. This is the classic tragedy of the commons. And so, Jim McCabe, I want to ask you, talk about how the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act, which was passed in 2014, how it attempts to address the tragedy of the commons with respect to our groundwater. And then, just to make it even more complicated for you, how do you see the proposed Tuscan Water District as an effort to subvert the spirit of SGMA?
Sure. Well, the tragedy of the commons as it relates to groundwater derives from the feature of California law that says, hey, if you own land, you can pump water out from underneath it in any amount that you can that you like, so long as you're using it to benefit the land, so long as you're using it to grow a crop. And there's no overall limit on that, or at least until SGMA. There's no overall limit on what people could pump. As a consequence, the tragedy that occurred is that the aquifers throughout the state have dropped far below their historical levels, and they continue to drop. And that's true in Butte County, it's true in many other places. But that was the issue that had to be addressed. How can we prevent the groundwater levels from dropping so that our wells no longer reach them? And it was a sort of a landmark act that was passed in 2014, and it had a great overall objective. It said that in time, basically by 2040 or 2042, certain heavily affected groundwater areas had to have implemented a plan to keep and to maintain groundwater levels so that they're not falling on a long-term basis anymore. That's a great idea. I mean, it had to be done, and it's a solution. One of the ways you solve a tragedy of the commons is you adopt rules.
Right.
And that was a rule. Now, it's a great objective, but the law's kind of a mess. And it's kind of a mess because it was a compromise package that was worked out over time, and nobody, no one party got all what they wanted. And it's a mess in part because there's no statewide standard. There's no statewide mechanism for achieving groundwater sustainability. There's actually not even a statewide agency that is directly involved in figuring this out. There's just one that checks on the performance of others. So the legislature's solution was really hyper-local. They decided to let groundwater study, planning, and execution all be done by what are called groundwater sustainability agencies, GSAs. And any local, and those included basically volunteers. Any local agency with authority over water or land use was eligible to become a GSA. And so cities and counties clearly could become GSAs, but all kinds of special districts could also become GSAs, including irrigation districts, reclamation districts, water storage districts, and the like. And those guys, all they had to do was file a notice with the state, and they could become a GSA. Once an agency becomes a GSA, it has legislative powers with regard to groundwater. Okay? And the constitutional issue with that, and there is a constitutional issue, is that under the United States Constitution, entities with legislative powers must elect their leadership by allowing all citizens in the entity's jurisdiction to vote.
Okay. Yep, good, okay. Good. That okay. makes sense. And I just want to pause because this stuff is so very complicated. And I was just going to say, Jim McCabe, what does legislative powers really mean when you say regard to water? And just to reiterate, legislative powers means you have to be democratically elected. One person, one vote.
Correct.
Carry on.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, one of the things the GSAs can do is they could basically adopt ordinances regulating the time of use of water, the amount of use of water. There's a lot of things they could do. They basically the legislature kicked the can down the road to the GSAs to decide how they're going to achieve groundwater sustainability. How are they going to do it? And to do it, they can raise taxes. They can assess taxes to build projects, but they can also, as I said, they can also tell you, that you can't drill a well or that you can, and if you drill a well, how much you can take out of it. If it comes to that, they would have that power. That's a legislative power. Okay? And the fact that they have legislative power and they don't take it, that is also a legislative power. The decision not to act is something that is legislative. And if you give that to someone, to an entity that is not democratically elected, that's a violation of the Constitution.
And that, and Jim, make that point right there. That's a critical piece in what's going on.
Yeah. I mean, the law is a mess, and we have a number of GSAs that I think, if challenged, would fail on constitutional grounds. But we also have the urgency of getting forward and moving forward on addressing groundwater sustainability. But this is sort of a long-winded way of getting to the Tustin Water District. The district that Tustin proposes to form is a landowner voter district. It is not a one citizen, one vote district. They have proposed 102,000 acres, and in that 102,000 acres, there's about 25 farming groups that could control the votes in that district. And the way they vote, you don't vote in a landowner district, you don't vote one person, one vote. You vote $1 of assessed value of land per vote. So it's, as I said last night, Tustin Water District is going to propose to be run by the golden rule. He who has the gold rules. And the owners there's a very small number of owners who would control all the votes in the district, and they're all big agricultural producers. But in that same district, there are 6,500 people living. They all live on domestic wells.
Right.
Tustin wants to get in and be involved in how groundwater management gets implemented in Butte County, and they want to do it in an undemocratic oligarchy. The few want to rule choices with regard to a public asset for the many.
Right.
And because keep in mind, water in California belongs to the state. It doesn't belong to people. It belongs to the state. People have a right to use it, and they have certain defined rights to use it. But it is a state asset. SGMA has established a state objective. And when we are talking about dealing with public property, when we're talking about adopting the rules and regulations as to how it can be used, those are all actions that have to be done by entities that are democratically elected. And you can understand why.
Right, right. Let me just say, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Real Issue on KZFR Radio. I have Jim McCabe on the phone with me. He was a speaker last night at the town hall meeting, and I neglected to say that was hosted by the Butte Water Watch, which talked about the proposed formation of the Tustin Water District. Jim McCabe, I want to go in. I want to get the reason that I think it's so hard for people to be interested in this topic and to really understand what's happening is because it's so very complicated. There's so much minutia and there's even intrigue in all of this. And then there's California State Constitution and there's case law and all of those things. But Jim McCabe, let me ask you, a GSA, which is a groundwater sustainability agency, which
yeah.
has legislative power as a mm-hmm. result of SGMA,
right.
This proposed water district, the Tustin Water District, is not going to be a GSA, which means it doesn't technically have the power to take and move water, and it won't have as much power as a full-on GSA like the Vina GSA or the Wyandotte GSA. So, Jim
That's
McCabe,
right.
talk about what that relationship might be in terms of the non-GSA Tustin Water District along with the Vina GSA.
That's a good question, and it's one that we really keep asking and we don't get a good answer to. Okay? The AGUBC that you mentioned before was a private corporation. It was invitation only. You had to be a big ag producer to join, and you had to pay $2,500 to get in. They kept their means closed. They didn't disclose what they were up to. But then, out of that organization, three people emerge and file a petition to form the Tustin Water District with the Butte Local Agency Formation Commission, LAFCO. And it's pretty vague, but going back to the question you asked before, is how is Tustin seeking to thwart the purposes of SGMA? One of the purposes of SGMA is to develop groundwater sustainability plans on a local basis with input from all of the stakeholders.
Right.
You know, you have to consider the interests of, obviously in the county we have to give great consideration to agricultural interests because it's a backbone of the economy. But we also have people living here. We have groundwater-dependent environments, that we don't want to have die off. And we have other concerns with regard to the health of water courses throughout the county as well. So the Vine GSA is going through that right now, and they're being very transparent. They're soliciting stakeholder input. They're keeping people informed. But what Tustin now says they want to do is that they want to form this landowner voter district. And what they want to do is they want to pick up projects from the Vina GSA that they think that they would be better at implementing, construction projects or whatever it may be that's necessary to carry out some of these proposed management actions, projects or management actions. But when you ask them what specifically you want to do, they say, we haven't picked a project yet. They say that they want to move surface water somewhere in Butte County, but they won't say from where they want to get it. And so what this looks like is an attempt by the biggest farming interests in the county, some of which are out of county corporations. The biggest farming interests in the county want to be the guys who are there to execute on the groundwater sustainability plan. But clearly, they're going to favor the projects that they like, that their priorities get honored, that they get served by those projects. And I fear, as a county citizen, they may shortchange conservation projects. And if Vine is sitting out there with a list of projects and somebody who's willing to do only some of them or more enthusiastic about doing some of them than others, that skews the priorities that have been landed upon by a collaborative process in which a lot of people had a lot of input.
Right.
It interferes. And furthermore, Tustin is completely unnecessary. Uh-huh. This is just another government unit that these guys want to form so that they can control the voting in that government unit.
Right.
It's nuts.
Jim McCabe, the fact that I asked you to clarify the relationship with the Vina GSA and this proposed water district, and your answer is, well, we don't really know because we can't get a straight answer from the petitioners. I think that's quite telling. As I listened to you as well, is you said the Vina GSA is very transparent. You can go to their public meetings. It's every single member of the Vina GSA is an elected official that is accountable to their constituents at the next election.
Actually, no, that's not true. No, there's three.
Oh, that's right.
There's a City of Chico representative on the Vina GSA. There's a Butte County elected official representative on the Vina GSA. There's a Durham Irrigation District representative on the Vina GSA. And then there are two public positions that are appointed to the GSA. One of them is a domestic well user representative. And the people who wanted to serve in that capacity applied, and they got interviewed, and they were selected by the other members of the board, as I recall. But then there's a fifth seat. And it's appointed by the Board of Supervisors, but it's appointed from a list of four people given to the Board of Supervisors by, drumroll, the AGUBC.
So the AGUBC gives a list of potential members of the Vina GSA chosen by the Board of Supervisors, but it's also the AGUBC that is promoting this water district. And to get back to the Vina GSA, which is very transparent. It has to abide by the Brown Act and all of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But the Tuscan Water District is a private organization. I mean, it would be responsible
members. Once it's formed, it becomes public.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
But it is not accountable to the larger community.
Correct.
But the concern I think that many folks have is that they're seeking authority as a water district. But they are unable to say, one, which water are we talking about, and two, what are we going to do with that water if and when we get it? And three, what is the infrastructure? That's the concern I think that a lot of folks have is they're asking for authority, but they're not yet able to tell us what they're going to use that authority for.
I think they could tell us,
but
I think they've chosen not to.
Okay.
Look, AGUBC has been around for several years. These guys, they spent a lot of money getting studies done. They talked to each other. I can't imagine that they wasted a lot of time in deciding what projects they thought were the best for the larger agricultural producers in the county. And they probably have a wish list that they have drawn up. And they developed that, they developed that wish list with money that they solicited from their members. But in the Tuscan Water District application, they want to be paid back for that money. I mean, I asked last night whether or not the AGUBC would make available to the public before the Tuscan Water District application is considered what they spent that money on. I frankly think, and I bet $100 that they have decided what projects they think are the most important and that they want to build, whether the Vina GSA thinks that that's the right priority or not.
Right.
And once they're formed, that's what they're going to push.
And to be clear,
let me say, some of those projects may be pretty unpopular with the broader population in Butte County,
right,
or specifically with the people in the Tuscan Water District that they're proposing. I mean, there's a couple of projects that kind of hit hot buttons in Butte County. One of them is the direct recharge of the aquifer with surface water.
Mm-hmm.
And if you could find surface water somewhere,
right?
You could theoretically pump it into the aquifer to recharge the aquifer, and thereby enhance the amount of recharge from year to year. So that you're drawing the groundwater down less. But you're basically replacing surface water. You're substituting surface water for groundwater.
Right.
There are very complex legal issues about that. Basically, that becomes water that's owned by the importer of the water. If you put it into the aquifer, then you own it. Whereas everybody gets to use pure groundwater. Are they going to start charging district residents a fee for pumping through their wells to recover the injected water? Who knows? But they don't want to talk about that because, as you can imagine, it would stir up a hornet's nest. And the second question is, what's the source of their water?
Right.
And we've asked this question several different times, and we get the same evasive answer every time. I think it probably includes Paradise Irrigation District water. Paradise Irrigation District, before the campfire, had sufficient water rights to serve everybody who lived up there on the ridge. I mean, they had a good deal of water rights. There are far fewer people living there since the campfire. So all the Paradise Irrigation District water is not getting used in Paradise. I suspect that the guys on the valley floor want to grab as much of that as they can and bring it down because it is a solution to the valley floor problem. But it deprives Paradise of the capacity to rebuild to the extent that it was there before. Whether that's a good idea or not, I don't know. But I don't think that a handful of valley floor farmers should be deciding the future of Paradise real estate. In a landowner voter district, it's just not right.
Jim McCabe, and just for listeners, I have Jim Brobeck going to be on pretty soon. We're going to take a quick break, and I'll have Jim Brobeck from Aqua Alliance on, and we are going to get down and dirty in terms of recharge and the legal aspect of groundwater substitution and all of that stuff, just for listeners. But Jim McCabe, and my last question for you is, honestly, I have 1,000 more questions, but we're out of time. But my question for you is, just to kind of reiterate, we have this proposed Tuscan Water District. That what they're saying is it will be democratic because all the members will vote, but it's not one person, one vote. It is 1 acre per vote. So Deseret Farm, that has 12,000 acres, they will have 12,000 votes, as opposed to somebody who has 300 acres, they'll have 300 votes. So,
or me, I'll have five.
And you'll have five votes. So one of the things that concerns a lot of folks is that We are really only talking about this now, and it's a big deal. And this could become a reality as soon as a month from now when it goes to LAFCO. Let me ask you, what is the rush? Or is there time for there to be a full public vetting, a full real community countywide discussion about is this a good idea?
There's time. You know, Tuscan wants to get this through because, frankly, I think they don't want to have a lot of scrutiny of this. They will say that they, you know, oh, they want to get started on this project. The groundwater sustainability plan isn't finished yet, and it won't be implemented for a number, you know, it won't really start getting implemented for a number of years. The reason people haven't heard about it is deliberate.
Mm-hmm.
And part of it, and it also occurs in obscure reaches of county government. You know, you kind of have to, you know, not everybody really, you know, gets off on going to LAFCO meetings,
right,
or, you know, or the Water Commission meetings. And so it's been able to fly under the radar because no one's really noticed it. So I think that's kind of why, and there is no rush. The county has never considered alternative ways to implement the groundwater sustainability plan projects other than Tuscan Water District. Four years ago, a county employee who had really no authority to do this, basically, or at least he secured authority to talk to these guys. He basically decided that the way to do this, the way to build whatever you needed to build to achieve groundwater sustainability, would best be done by the big farmers. And he did not develop any kind of county-based structure to carry that out. And there are county-based structures that need to carry it out where basically it's the Board of Supervisors who ultimately are responsible for this, or it's a board of trustees of a county water district that are democratically elected and who would be responsible for this. They never explored that. The LAFCO should not approve this application before the county goes back and revisits alternatives to having Tuscan do this work.
And Jim, I know that I said that was my last question, but here really and truly is my last question, is the VINA GSA, which is a public entity. You can go to the meetings, you can read the minutes, all of that stuff. They have the power of a GSA. What can this newly formed Tuscan Water District do that the VINA GSA cannot do in terms of projects that move us towards sustainability in the next couple of decades?
There's anything that they can do. I don't think they add anything to the mix except possibly the power of eminent domain. As a California water district, they would have the power of eminent domain so that if there's a farm that they want to run a pipe across, they could acquire the land to do that. The GSA, as I recall, and I'm not absolutely certain about this, I'm not sure the GSA has powers of eminent domain.
And so what I'm gathering it's not even a question, it's my last comment, is what I'm gathering from you is if the VINA GSA, if the Tuscan Water District cannot do anything more except possibly for eminent domain, then the VINA GSA, then it sounds like here's just another layer of government that doesn't enhance our efforts to sustainable groundwater use.
Right, and all it does is it injects into the process a special interest group with a very small number of people in controlling it.
Jim McCabe, as always, it's fascinating to talk with you. So, hey, listen, your talk last night was so interesting, and it was really interesting because as I watched, I thought he is a lawyer. You are, I don't know if you're in the courtroom very often, but it sure sounded like you were laying it down. So very interesting.
Thank you very much.
Yeah,
I am a litigator.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go.
Yeah.
So we witnessed it.
Yep.
Jim McCabe, thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Sure. Thank you, Sue.
Bye-bye. All right. Bye-bye. All right. We are going to take a really quick break. There's some goofy stuff going on with the computer, so I can't play the song I wanted to play. So what we're going to do is do a quick Radio Paradise. You're listening to The Real Issue on KZFR Radio. We'll be right back with Aqua Alliance's water policy analyst, Jim Brobeck. Don't go away. Back. You are listening to The Real Issue on KZFR Radio. This is Sue Hildebrand. We have been talking about the proposed Tuscan Water District that was discussed last night during a town hall meeting. You may have never heard of this proposal, except for, I don't know, maybe here on The Real Issue. But if you haven't, it isn't surprising because there has not been much discussion, much public discussion about it. But this effort started several years ago, and the Local Agency Formation Commission, or LAFCO, is poised to approve its formation. So we're going to continue this edition of The Real Issue on this topic. So Jim McCabe laid out his concerns about this effort, that the effort will result in the creation of an oligarchy with respect to water. And what that means, it's just control by a very few people, as opposed to having all stakeholders involved in the decision-making process. So to put this effort here in Butte County into the larger historical context of the fight for water all the way across California, I do have on the phone with me the water policy analyst for the nonprofit, nonpartisan organization Aqua Alliance, Jim Brobeck. Jim Brobeck is also a member of the Stakeholders Advisory Committee for the VINA GSA. He provides technical and environmental expertise to the VINA GSA members as they strive to craft a plan to move this county towards sustainability. So as always, Jim Brobeck, I am so appreciative that you're giving me some time. Thanks for being here tonight.
I'm excited to be here. I've got a lot I want to say.
Good. Then let me just throw it out here, and then I'm going to let you run with it. So, Jim Brobeck, you understand the history and the politics of water here in California more than almost anybody I know, and you understand the fight that is raging right now. And so, as I mentioned in the last segment, Jim McCabe argued that the formation of the Tuscan Water District, where there's 1 acre, 1 vote, and not one person, one vote, it'll result in an oligarchy where a handful of people and corporations in this particular situation would control the water. So, Jim Brobeck, I want to ask you, what is your reaction to Jim McCabe's analysis of the result of the formation of this water district?
Point on. And my analysis is that oligarchs regional power brokers who are willing to supply an empire or state with natural resources at bargain rates in exchange for pay and power. The empire gets the resource by paying a few people generously, but leaves the public trust, in this case, the balance of the aquifer, the regional environment and the economy stranded. California water law has created a ready-made oligarchy in the Sacramento Valley by endowing about 2% of the population with senior water rights to divert river water. And this has been part of a long-standing plan on the part of the state of California to integrate the aquifer system into the entire state water supply. In 1978, the California Department of Water Resources described the Butte Basin Tuscan Aquifer System as an underutilized source of water that could be integrated into the state water supply. By allowing senior water diverters to transfer their river allocations, leave it in the river to be sent south during dry years, while continuing to grow crops by tapping the groundwater. Now, the department knew this would impact the existing agriculture wells and groundwater-dependent farms. So they recommended expanding water district canals to attempt refilling the aquifer during the wet years. This plan explained the existing surface water distribution system could be expanded into areas presently relying on groundwater. The Department of Water Resources writes in this 1978 document, "This basin has not been operated as a major source of supply. The historical maximum depth could be exceeded by about 100 feet to create the storage volumes." And they further explain that the existing surface water distribution system could be extended to serve the estimated 16,000 acres of land presently relying on groundwater. They also mention that the initial draft or overdraft from the basin may be an issue, and you bet it would be an issue. In 1996, they did this. They allowed the surface water diverters to sell their surface water, and they allowed them to tap the groundwater. The groundwater plummeted, leaving numerous farms and domestic wells high and dry, and it ruined the crops of a lot of people that year. Now, in 2006... In 2006, the United States Bureau of Reclamation, that is the federal side of the water projects, awarded a grant to the Glen Cruz Irrigation District, which operates big wells right on the other side of the river from Chico, on the other side of the Sacramento River. The grant wording explained, "The Glen Cruz Irrigation District shall define water delivery systems from the Oroville and Shasta reservoirs to provide surface water delivery to parties now pumping from the Tuscan Formation to eliminate the risk to them of more aggressive pumping from the formation to optimize conjunctive management of Sacramento Valley water resources." And this was in Glen Cruz Irrigation District's own words, "to improve Central Valley system-wide water supply reliability by participation in the emerging water transfer markets, by integrating the Lower Tuscan into the Central Valley-wide water supply system." So this is the overarching scheme that the Tuscan Water District wants to participate in.
Jim Brobeck, I my head is getting ready to explode. So let me see if I understand what you're saying, because if I do, it is going to explode. So based on what you said, and tell me if I'm getting this. When you say this is what the state has long targeted the Tuscan aquifer for what you said, quote, integration into the state system. In other words, they want our water. They want to take the north state water and move it to the south. That's integration into the system, and I have little air quotes going. Then what I find fascinating is that you said part of that DWR report is to say that to dig 100 feet, I missed something there, would create storage volume. That suggests...
Right. They would, by overdrafting the aquifer,
yes,
during dry years,
right,
by
right,
having the surface water, the rice growers start pumping groundwater and leave the water in the river to send that water south through the delta.
So they could
lower the,
yep,
aquifer level,
yep,
about 100 feet.
Yep.
This is exactly what happened,
right,
in the 1996 drought water bank.
Got it.
Now, the Tuscan Water District application to LAFCO explains, they mentioned recharge,
yes,
over 20 times. According to their application, the primary intention of the Tuscan Water District is, quote, formation of a new water district with the primary purpose, power to import, transfer, and recharge water within the Vina and a portion of the Butte subbasins. So they want to expand the surface water distribution system and to transfer and to refill the aquifer. And this plays right into that Glenn Clusey irrigation draft,
right, right,
which is to expand it to reduce, they say, to eliminate the risks to the existing groundwater users. Well, that is fanciful thinking. Damage done is damage done, and you're not going to replace it in a year or two when the rain comes back by sending water down these new canals.
Right.
But the infrastructure that the TWD is imagining is exactly what the state and the feds want Northern California water districts to implement.
Right.
They want to integrate the groundwater by expanding irrigation canals to try to refill emptied aquifers. Now, this is called water banking.
Right.
Some people would call it water mining. Now, water banking requires three things. It requires that you intentionally draw down the aquifer to create storage space. It requires a source of diverted river water to replenish the evacuated aquifer. And a basin that impedes the movement of stored water out of the water bank. Now, that last one is problematic because the Tuscan aquifer system is not static. It flows from the Sierra Cascade foothills under Butte County and into Glenn and Colusa County. So any recharge projects on this upgradient portion of the aquifer here would benefit the lower portion of the aquifer system eventually.
Right.
The water flows in that direction, and if you take water out on the other side, that increases the speed and the volume of the flow. Now, the legal aspects of this and the privatization comes in here. The Vina Groundwater Sustainability Agency attorney, Valerie Kincaid, composed a concise analysis of the legal consequences of artificial aquifer recharge. She made it clear that these experimental projects privatizes the water stored in the aquifer.
Right.
Here's a quote from her report. So long as the water was diverted pursuant to a valid water right prior to recharge, the recharge water would be owned by the diverter. And depending on the project scope, it could intend to export recharge water out of basin. The Kincaid document also observed the experimental nature of recharge projects when she wrote, quote, it's possible that recharge projects may underestimate the amount of water that migrates or is lost, which could result in allowing the recharger to extract more water than is reasonable,
right,
which could result in decreasing the amount of water available for the overlying groundwater users. That's why I always depict these proposed recharge projects as experimental.
Right.
Because I think the hydrology indicates it would not benefit Butte County, especially those of us on the east side of the basin, like the Chico urban area.
Right.
Which has an urban forest that absolutely relies on the shallow aquifer to remain verdant during these hot summer months. I recently talked to the Chico Urban Forester, and he agreed with me that these mature trees that provide us such a drop in temperature, such a shaded canopy throughout the city footprint, are not being irrigated, but they have to be tapping the aquifer. And if you pull the aquifer down below 80 feet, none of the groundwater-dependent trees will survive. And here the Department of Water Resources thinks they can pull it down an extra 100 feet below the historic lows. Well, that is going to change the environment in Chico drastically and benefit only a few oligarchs who are able to participate in the emerging California water market.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Real Issue on KZFR Radio. I have Jim Brobeck on the phone with me. He is the water policy analyst for Aqua Alliance, and he is one of my top go-to people when I need to know about water. Jim Brobeck, I lost my question.
Let me explain to you what one of the main activities that Aqua Alliance is currently involved with.
Good. Yep. Go for
it. We are with some of our allied nonprofits in court challenging these water transfer programs that are shipping the water south, shipping the river water south, while the irrigation districts are engaged in what they're calling a supplemental water supply, as well as groundwater substitution water transfers, where they pump groundwater instead of diverting river water. And the water is heading south. Of course, this year there's less water to head south for everybody. But the infrastructure's in place now with groundwater wells on the irrigation districts to pump directly into their canals to irrigate the rice fields. Now, don't get me wrong. I am not averse to growing rice up here. I think especially when there's abundant water that it's valuable. It's a great food crop. Agriculture is a keystone economic driver of the North State. It provides wildlife habitat, especially during the fall when they use water for decomposition. And some of the water that they divert does leak into the aquifer and helps maintain aquifer levels. But when they start tapping the aquifer to grow the rice and ship the water south, this will have disastrous effects on the balance of the aquifer system. So Aqua Alliance is currently challenging numerous water transfer projects that are taking the water out of the Sacramento Valley and sending it south, mostly to big irrigation districts, agriculture irrigation districts in the San Joaquin Valley. That's where most of the water goes.
Right.
So that's one of the main things we're involved with. Rather expensive lawsuits, I must say. But we think it's worth the investment and our time and our resources because we need to put a block up against these water transfers that are so integrated with these other long-standing plans that people in the Tuscan Water District, I think some of them know what's going on. I think a lot of the 75 or 70, however many small farms have signed up to it, I think they're trying to do the right thing.
Right.
But I don't think they understand the big picture here of how this is going to have a disastrous effect by draining the aquifer out from underneath us during these dry periods. Because this is the buffer that we need to maintain during dry periods rather than over-exploit if we want to maintain our urban forests, our stream flow, our salmon, our domestic wells. All these things rely on a balanced aquifer that allows for the shallow portion of the aquifer to interact with the surface for the quality of life that is so important up here.
Jim Brobeck, as I mentioned, and the reason that I wanted to have you on the program after Jim McCabe is because Jim McCabe was focusing really on the Tuscan Water District and the Sigma in terms of our area. But your background or your knowledge base is the history and California wide. And I am wondering if, as I listen to you talking about the exercising, as they say, of the aquifer where they drain the aquifer to create space, and what you're talking about is if the aquifer is drained 100 feet as DWR was suggesting, I'm wondering if we could look to what happened in the Owens Valley and say that could literally happen here in Chico. Am I way off base?
Not at all. You are imagining a disastrous future that we've seen play out in various places around the state. including the Owens Valley, but also including the San Joaquin Valley,
right,
which used to have a robust aquifer system similar to what we have up here, and has been drained so disastrously that the whole ground is buckling and dropping,
right,
creating big infrastructure problems down there, impeding the replenishment of the aquifer, and really impacting the people in the environment that can least afford to deal with it. And that disaster that's happening in the San Joaquin Valley is working its way north up through the Delta and into the Sacramento Valley. There's already subsidence happening on portions on the west side of the valley, south of the Southern Buttes. So overextending agriculture, irrigated agriculture in Northern California is already starting to have impacts. It's so important for humans to identify and respect the concept of carrying capacity and not exceed it. And we have a real treasure up here with our hydrology. But we can't greedily keep expanding irrigated agriculture into the foothills and beyond, because the whole system will eventually collapse and we'll lose the whole thing.
Right.
And this is why Aqua Alliance is so optimistically and adamantly trying to defend the hydrologic balance of the Northern Sacramento Valley, because we believe that we can have a viable economy, agriculture economy, that we can have viable habitat for humans and for salmon, the prime, most charismatic indicator species in California that still exists is the salmon. And if we lose the salmon, should be a flashing red light that the system is collapsing.
Jim Brobeck and Barbara Vlamis and all of the folks that work in Aqua Alliance, I'm always in awe of the work that you all do, because the North State, because Butte County, because this whole community is really a gem. And it's one of the few real healthy places in California. And so I always appreciate the work that you all do. And I thank you for your time, as always, for being on this program.
Let me say one more thing.
Yeah.
You know I'm involved with the VINA, Groundwater Sustainability Agency.
Yep, you're on the stakeholders. Yep, go on.
Stakeholder Advisory Committee.
Yep.
And we have identified numerous water conservation projects that could be accomplished without setting up another taxing quasi-governmental agency like the Tuscan Water District. These conservation projects would lead to aquifer stabilization and would incentivize adopting modern irrigation infrastructure by temporarily allowing farmland improvement tax forbearance, for instance, and grant funding instead of Tuscan Water District property assessment taxes. So I encourage people to be optimistic, to recognize there are alternatives to privatizing the aquifer, to attempting to do experimental aquifer recharge. And that's what we need to put forth is more rational conservation measures rather than trying to just squeeze more water out of the system.
Jim Brobeck, can I get you to commit to come back next week and we talk about some of those projects that you have identified?
If not me, then one of my colleagues on the GSA, I could find some people that are promoting some of these projects.
Perfect.
So talk about it.
Perfect. Yep, that's exactly what we need to hear. What are the alternatives? I think we need to expand our imagination, especially in this time. So, Jim Brobeck,
thanks for inviting Aqua Alliance to be on the program.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much. I'll talk with you soon.
Bye.
Bye-bye. All right, so this brings us to the end of this edition of The Real Issue. This edition, let's see, this edition was made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by BCAC.TV, Butte County's public access television station, and they're broadcasting on Comcast Channel 11. BCAC.TV provides arts, entertainment, and information programming, including daily broadcasts of Democracy Now!, weekdays at 11 a.m. and 5 p.m. Things are changing at Comcast Channel 11. For more information or to get involved, visit bcac.tv. So you heard Jim Brobeck. Next week, what we'll do is either Jim Brobeck or somebody else on the Stakeholder Advisory Committee of the VINA GSA will be back on the program, and we'll talk about what are some of those creative projects that will move our community towards sustainability, water sustainability. The other thing I have planned for next week is I have Justin Myers with the North State Labor, and he is going to talk about the recall election. And so we'll just leave it there. If you have your ballot sitting on your kitchen table like I do, please fill it out. Get it in the mail. You have just a couple more weeks to do it, but you might as well do it right now. So anyway, we'll be back here next week, same time, same place. Until then, peace out. Oops.
To save a world in despair. Who really cares?